I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Lazy CEO Podcast. I'm Jay Liu. Join my conversations with the entrepreneurs behind the iconic brands we all know and love.
Hey, Potty fam. We've got the amazing Melinda Willis on the pod today. You may know her from the last season of Married at First Sight, but she's also the founder of two incredible businesses in the beauty space, Feather Sisters and Melly's Beauty Salon. Mel started Feather Sisters, the lash and brow beauty brand, in 2016, and within the first 3 months made $100,000 in 10 days by nailing the product and digital marketing. Mel shares the story of a rebrand project that started at a $15,000 budget that grew to $250,000. Talk about a scope creep and how this overinvestment in product and rebrand dried up funds to actually market and sell the product. More recently, Mel's opened a beauty salon, Melly's Beauty Parlor, and we talk about the challenges of balancing a bricks and mortar store, a seven-figure direct-to-consumer e-com business, and building a personal brand. All right, let's get into it. Hi, Mel.
Hello.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, so great to have you. Thanks for joining us in Sydney. And you're here for a bunch of things. You've been on a bit of a whirlwind tour.
I have been. I've been like go, 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 because the new math season has aired. Obviously, I was on the last season just last year. So now all the outlets can't get the new talent because they're in contracts with the network. So they come to the old talent and they're like, tell us everything.
Oh my God. So okay. Potty fam, I promise you, I'm not going to turn this into a maths podcast because I do whenever there's a guest and they're like, oh, I'd like to switch off by watching reality TV. We go on about a 10-minute tangent. So I try not to, but tell me, what have they been asking you?
They're trying to see like who we think are the success couples, who we think breaks up. Apparently there's massive scandals this year, but like not one of them, a few of them. And apparently it's just this big chaotic season. And they're trying to say like, do you have any scoop? Who's still together? Who's the cheating scandal?
Right.
Who is everything?
And do then, you?
Well, I don't have as much scoop as some of the other members, but that's because I love math. So I'm like, don't tell me.
Yeah.
So I've been taking my wild guess and I hope I get it right.
I think it's a real flex from me. You know, I'm up to date with math. So when people are like, oh, I'm too busy for blah, I'm like, you're not too busy. If I've got two kids, I have my business and I'm up to date with maths, and you are not prioritizing maths, okay? You are not prioritizing it. Don't tell me you're too busy. So that's your first business lesson out there. Yes, exactly. All right. Tell me about your background. What were you like as a kid?
So pretty much I grew up with three brothers. So I was a tomboy, I think up until the age of like 16.
Wow.
I was like wrestling in mud and I would get like trucks and cars for my birthday and all of that. So I was not in beauty at all. And funnily enough, all I do is beauty now. We weren't too well off. Money was never really like a priority. It was like family first, love first. So grew up in a really good, strong family like that. But I was always, from a very young age, I wanted the best of everything. I wanted to be the best, do the best, have the best. I don't like being told no. So when I was young and there were certain things that I wanted or wanted to do, and I was obviously told no because it was out of our, you know, means at the time, I was like, well, I'm going to get it. So as soon as I could get a job, I did. I think I was like right on the day of getting a job. I'd already lined up my businesses. I had three at once. I was still doing school.
What was your first job?
Hungry Jack's.
Oh my God. I was at McDonald's.
Oh, that's so funny.
I actually got rejected from KFC because I was brutally honest in the interview. They were like, you're fine with taking out the rubbish. And I was like, oh,
I guess. I don't really want to. And then I was like, what hours can you do? I'm like, I can do the hours of 3:45 to 6:30, which is like, fuck all. And then like end up working at McDonald's till like 1 a.m. But like, yeah, you learn. But yes, I think, you know, if these fast food joints.
Yeah, I had a Hungry Jack's and Woolworths at the same time. They were my first two. So I was like trying to juggle it all. But then, you know, you get more tax taken off the second job. And so then I got a third job and I was like,
doing what?
I was walking, handing out all the pamphlets.
Like, oh my God.
My mom and brothers would sit there and help me like fold these pamphlets. And then mum would have to like come with me and she'd drive the car and I'd walk for safety. Yeah. And I would want them in all
me and my partner both done that too. You got into beauty. How did that evolve?
I just loved beauty and I was always that friend that wanted to do like my friend's makeup and everything if we were going out. And then I just loved all the hairstyles. I was always like learning how to like plait hair, put hair up. I needed to do a course. I think it was like some study related thing because I was living out of home with my partner and it was like, okay, you can get like this rent subsidy and blah, blah, blah if you're like studying. And so I was like trying all these multiple incomes and then I was like, okay, I need a full-time study and then I get this and this. And I was like, I just want to learn beauty to know beauty. I don't want to go into it. I don't want to do it. That's not what I want to be. I just did it to learn for myself. And then I finished my beauty course, loved it, and got invited to work on the cruise ships after doing like an interview because they were like, we're only going to take like one or two people. So I'm very competitive. And I was like, it has to be me.
And then so you're the only one that got in?
I was the only one that got in.
Oh, love that. Yeah. Tell me, actually, we'll digress again because I am going my first cruise ship in like 2 months.
Yay.
With my parents and my kids.
You'll love it.
Yeah?
Yeah, you'll love it. You won't love to work on one, but you'll love to holiday on one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, awesome. What was bad about working on them?
It's not glamorous at all. So you're like...
And you thought it was?
Yeah. They sell it to you like that. And you're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be traveling. I'm going to be living the dream. It's like so glamorized. I'm on this cruise ship. But really you're under the engine, which is like in the water, in the dormitories. Uh-huh. And you're, I would probably say like not much bigger than like where we're seated right now is like a double bunk and this tiny little shower and you're sharing it with someone. There's no room for your bags in there.
You've it's like below deck or like Jack on the Titanic.
You can hear the engine and you can like, you don't sleep. It's just like a little tiny little dormitory down there in the heat and it's not glamorous.
Mm.
You don't want to do it. We were doing 17-hour days of like massaging and I remember one day I didn't get a break until 11 hours.
Oh my God.
Like, there's no rules on the water.
Yeah.
You work hard and it's all commission.
Right.
So they told us that we'd be so rich and have all this money for traveling and we hardly traveled and we got no money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. God.
When I got back from having that on my resume, it like accelerated me in the beauty world. So any job I wanted, I could get in the beauty industry because of the sales training and everything behind it. You went and trained in London before boarding the cruise ships.
So you how come you got sales training?
All it was sell, sell, sell. We don't care if you do a good facial. We don't care if they like the massage. Uh-huh. Sell them products.
Right. Oh. Yeah. My least favorite thing about some beauty parlors and salons, it makes me like not want to actually go back for a massage because I'm like, oh my God, they're going to do their spiel. And then while they're massaging you or doing a facial, they're like, do you have a tone? I'm like, no, I've got it all. I've got it. It's so stressful.
We would have people write on the form, do not sell to me.
Right.
Because they knew the cruise ships were trained to sell. We were like machines.
Yeah.
That's like why now in my salon, I tell the girls like, we only sell if someone actually needs it. If someone actually is going to like, this aftercare is going to help their retention. Otherwise, we don't push. Don't do that. That's bad.
Mel actually came to BitchCon, which you guys might know, which is the Like-Minded Bitches Drinking Wine Conference that I ran last year. The really key story is how you had quite a really terrible incident and you've turned it into something amazing.
So I moved to Melbourne. I wanted a bit of a change. I was just ready for, again, the next best thing. And I was there for 2.5 years. And during that time, I had applied to work on the ground as a checkout agent and then I was approached from the airline to then be a flight attendant. So I was flight attending for 2 years and I loved it. But one morning I went into work and they had these stocking vending machines and I purchased some stockings, put my hand in to get the stockings and the machine malfunctioned on my wrist. So it like did a cross with its doors. So my arm was in there. I'm in like heels, it was down like at knee level and it had actually jammed as a like the metal parts of the cross on my ligament. So 45 minutes late, everyone was putting like blankets and everything under my knees to try and get me up because I was so pulled down, and every little part of everyone trying to get me out was just hurting too much. And so they called the fire brigade, and the fire brigade had to come cut me out of the machine, the doors.
And they were
using like detergent and soap and trying to like get me out. So they had to come in with their tools. Yeah.
I already made this reference at VidCon, but it just reminds me of that Simpsons episode where Homer tries to get extra Coke cans from the vending machine. And then I think the firemen came and they're like, Mr. Simpson, are you just holding on to the Coke cans? And he's like, yes.
Yeah. Like anyway. If it was chocolate, it'd be worth it. But it wasn't. Yeah. It was stockings for work. Yeah. Everything was fine. And then iced it and everything. But one morning I woke up, I'd now moved back home to Brisbane. My pop was unwell, so I'd moved back home. And one morning I just went to pick up my gym top and I couldn't even pick it up. I was in the car on the way to work and I couldn't pick up my coffee cup. And I said, that's when I knew something was really, really wrong. I was deemed unfit to fly overnight because I couldn't get the 7 kilogram weight up high and I couldn't do any of that, which was all requirements for flight attending. So I went to see a specialist and he had said, you're 28. I don't want to do the surgery on you that would fix this because you would have no movement in your hand. You're too young for that. And then he had written into the airline to say she can't do, because I was on work cover. And they said she can't actually go into work to do anything else. She can't do customer service. She can hardly dress herself. She can't do her makeup, her hair. It's really bad. So I couldn't cook my food. I couldn't do anything with this wrist. So overnight it was like I was gymming twice a day and, you know, I was boxing and I was flying everywhere. And I really loved my life. But overnight it was kind of, well, you can't do anything now, which was a really big shock. And then they had some doctors of theirs come in 10 months into the work cover. And again, overnight they came back and said, oh, we're actually going to say that it's a gym injury. So they dropped me. So I was 28. My love of fitness and everything had just stopped overnight. My dream job had just stopped. And then I was also told by the specialist, like, Mel, you can't even answer a phone. You can't do retail. You can't work. So I was like, what am I meant to do? I have no money. Like, what am I meant to do if I can't work? And you won't give me the surgery. And like, they've dropped me and just went into quite a dark place, obviously, during all of that, and just started to think, like, I'm pretty resilient. So I was like, no, this is number one, not fair. And I don't have the mental capacity to fight this. I'm just going to now change my life, fix my life, do it myself. I didn't want to put my finances in the hands of someone else. I wanted to control all of that so that I couldn't be, you know, let down again. So I went to work for CEO and I was doing some personal assistance. By then I had 2 cortisone shots that luckily worked. So my wrist I could use again. And then I went to work for a CEO and he was really unstable and I could sense that. And again, I thought, here we go again. I'm literally about to be overnight jobless. Mm. So I started to panic and I was like, I can't put my finance in the hands of these people. I need something myself. So in my lunch breaks, I started to search businesses. What can I do? Products. And I was like going through Facebook and going through everything. And I was like, late at night, just looking. And then it kind of clicked. I was like, I love beauty. And I'd found a product that I was like, this would be awesome if it was like this. And I'm just going to get it in. And, you know, I had been researching private label and Alibaba and like e-commerce and everything. And then didn't have much money at the time from everything that had happened. And so, yeah, I think I had $300 that I put on my first order of this.
Wow.
Brow pen that I had found and it was, I didn't have enough money to like customize it.
Yeah.
You know, and the minimum quantity orders for that was so large.
Yeah, of course.
So I just got to start and this is how I'm going to start. And I don't care if it's not perfect and the packaging and everything, it was horrible. Horrible. Yeah. It was so embarrassing. So embarrassing.
Do you have a photo?
I do have photos.
Okay, good. You got to send it to us.
Yeah, I will. It was so embarrassing. I tried to send it out to an influencer at the time and it was like this, I'd printed out this little piece of paper that was like, thanks so much, wrapped it around, tied a little ribbon. Like it was not cute. Funnily enough, like once I started getting that going and I was packing it in my work breaks and trying to build a website by sitting and watching YouTube and Google and learning it all, then that job liquidated overnight. So I was like, the chances.
Yeah.
And that was me done. I was like, I'm never working for someone ever again. So I was working for the CEO and I felt something a bit rocky.
So it was like kind of like a sign.
Yeah. So then I was like, oh, I just feel my intuition. Like I need my own business. I need my own thing. I don't want to work for anyone anymore. I'm scared now that what happened at that airline is going to happen here. And
because most people want to work for other people for financial security.
Stability.
But actually,
nah.
You actually are the whims of someone else.
Yeah. You've put your whole life really in someone else. Like, you know, you've got to trust that person that they're good at business, that their business is good, that there's longevity there, and that they know what they're doing with their finances. But you are, at the end of the day, just a number to them, helping them grow their dream. So, yeah.
Except you, not you, Caitlin.
Yeah, but I was like, at the same time, I'm like.
Not my assistant.
But also, if you work for Showpo.
All the girls that work, I mean, boys, everyone works at Showpo.
Now that I have my salon, when I hear people talk like this, I'm like, okay, stop.
No, okay. So circling back to you just like being like, okay, I've got $300 to invest.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go custom. I love that. I think a lot of times people want their first product to be like customized, to have the right packaging. It's like, no, because just go and validate it, because I think once you also have more of a brand, you can, and you have better packaging, you have more customization, and you have built a brand for your business, then you can charge more premium prices. But at this point, I think you just like want to validate that this can all work.
You got to check it works. It's not going to work because you're passionate about it or because you love it, because you're not your customer. Like the customers have to love it. And how do you know that they think the way you do?
Yeah.
So step one is first, like, learn customers, learn consumer behavior. Like, you've got to start to research and learn. Mm. You can't just get a product, go, I love it. I love it in pink. Everyone's going to love it.
Yes.
First step is research.
Exactly. Right? Not everyone's going to like. That's the thing I think people like sometimes some entrepreneurs find it hard to grasp. Like, not everyone loves your product as much as you do. It's like someone telling you that your child is ugly and you're like, what? But it's like we have product failures. You know, we design so many pieces and sometimes they fail. That is the challenge.
That is business.
Yes.
That is business. If you don't have something that fails or something that flops, are you even in business?
Exactly. You're just doing the same boring thing. Yeah. As soon as the trend of what you're currently doing dies, then you've got no fallback because you're not testing new things out there.
And that's why you've got to like look into the future a lot more. Like when you're choosing your products, like I've never really had like a failed product. Mm-hmm. I would say that my like zone of genius is choosing a winning product.
Oh.
And I do that because I can get in the minds of that customer because I spent so much time learning how before going, well, I want it because I just want it.
You made $100,000 in 10 days in your first 3 months.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's a big, milestone.
Yeah, is that having the right product? Was that a marketing campaign? The only reason you didn't sell more is because you sold out. Like that's incredible.
Yeah, we sold out. We got it in. We sold out again. So we sold out. We weren't betting on ourselves enough. I had got my brother in at the very beginning and I had like sold him the story when everyone was saying, Mel, get a job. You need a job. And I was like sitting there spending all my time on YouTube and Google and just figuring out how do I do business? How do I learn this? And then I did my little first sales pitch was to my brother. Yeah. And it was kind of like, and he's an engineer and he is that go to uni 9 to 5, like kind of mentality. So I had to pretty much just say to him like, hey, I know this is all pink and it's all beauty and it's not like doing the best right now, but this is my vision. This is my dream. I need your mathematical and logical brain that's great with accounts and finance, everything I hate, to come on and help with my creative and my like vision. And together we just made it work.
Amazing.
Yes. Because we both grew up with like not much money. Like there were points there where we had like food checks and, you know, we didn't come from anything to have a loan, to have, you know, rich parents or to have anyone that could like invest in us. So we had to just invest in ourselves through belief, really. So that first order, it was $300. I got 150 units at the time. And then from there, I was like, okay, so I just need to market them at this price, sell 29 of them, and then I've made my money back. And so that's all I was trying to do, just make my money back. And then have a bit more so I can just then get a bit more, add another color, do this. And it got to the point that added my brother on. I had done one more order, which was 4,500 products, and added a few more products to the collection. And then my brother came on and he started researching Facebook ads. Again, no business background for him. He was YouTube, Google, and he has that mathematical mind. He started configuring these Facebook ads and making it work really well. So by the time we had put everything together and started, it was the sellout happened.
Wow.
It was almost overnight. We literally looked at each other and were like, what?
Yeah.
And we were trying to tell our parents and everything and they were like, what? Like, little yeah. you? Like, you know? We sold out. We got the product in, but we didn't order heaps because, again, we were still like, probably not meant for us. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe it was luck. We'll yeah. just do a small little order and then it's sold out in 2 weeks. And we were like, hey, we're on to something here.
Yeah. yeah.
From there, we sat down and did a big rebrand that was meant to be $15,000 at the time. And it ended up being
$250,000. Wow.
Yeah. And then by the time everything had happened, it was meant to take 3 months and it took a year and a half.
What was the lag?
The way I started was so small and it doesn't need to be perfect. I just need to start and figure it out along the way. We got to the point where we were like, okay, maybe to get it to the next level, because we don't know the next step, maybe we need to do what all everyone else is doing. Good marketing, big agency and these like prime looking products. And so we went into rebrand and originally we just wanted to change the packaging and get an agency to create some more like Facebook ads and stuff. One thing led to another. And now to customize, you had to have like a minimum of 12,000 units just to customize our colors onto the container.
Yeah.
And then by the time we got into the packaging and all of that, which was...
I know, because you're like, well, the package, this is so already expensive. Like that. We can't have this looking like yeah. that. And if that's like that, you can't have this other thing in the brown yeah. paper bag. Like it just kind of snowballs.
Yeah. Because you're either creating this winning product that's going to be almost like a drop shipping kind of style. It's going to be great. It's going to sell out and that's just going to be your sole product. Yeah. Or you're going to turn it into a brand. Yes. And I wanted to turn it into a brand. Mm. To turn it into a brand, you now need a collection and you now need an aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And you now need everything to be cohesive and aligned. Mm-hmm. Now you need the socials. Now you need the website. Now you need this beautiful packaging and these PR packages. And so I think we just tried to take that leap. But what we had done was got this agency on and this agency sold us the world and overpromised and underdelivered. And kind of by the end of it, we were a year and a half in. So we'd committed too much now. We couldn't pull back and we just had to keep going and trust the process. And by the time we got to it, now we had missed like Black Friday, the Christmas, like all the things that we had been prepping for, it was all missed. And we were about to start in the quietest time of the year. We now had, I think it was like 65,000 units sitting in like mum's garage. God. It was all a bit overwhelming. And what we had done was we had run out of money for marketing and campaigns because we'd
actually sell the product.
So we couldn't sell the product because we were like, we don't actually now have the money to promote this level of rebrand we did. The level of rebrand was so upscaled, so luxury. Mm. And we had put like so much quality into these products. We really went to the top and like kind of smashed everyone else out the water that was even remotely close to us. But then we kind of went, Now we don't have money to promote it. Yeah, so we can't pay for influencers and we can't do the ads. And yeah, and we'd miss the Black Friday and everything, right? So we're just like, crap. We just had to start again. It was like starting from scratch.
Wow.
Pick everything up, try and single out the products and push little campaigns for them where we would do tiny little Facebook ads and then wait for the money to come back and then grow again. We reinvested every single cent. Like for the next year, we took like zero. Reinvested absolutely everything back into the business and just again bet on ourselves.
Oh my God, that must be so scary. Would you be sitting on that much cover of stock?
Yeah. Well, and COVID happened at the time, right?
Oh my God.
So what we also had was massive delays because all these like warehouses and that were like shutting down during COVID. Oh. We had these massive delays of stock. You had to then with that much stock, you can't really fly it all over on air. Mm-hmm. So we'd put a fair amount of it like to be shipped over on ships. And then that all got delayed and lost for like 4 months.
Oh my God.
And then when we finally got product, we were like sending it out to customers, but then they were detouring from plane to ship. And then that was happening to the customers. So then we had all the customers coming to us being like, this is a scam. This is that. Where's my product? And we were trying to chase like a Australia Post. And then they would like take us nowhere. And it was all COVID. And it was just like, it was a time.
Oh my God.
We went from this high of, oh my gosh, we're just like on top of the world to now we're in business.
Oh my God.
Now business is started.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Well, if it helps, we replatform our entire website, which is like a six, almost seven figure like project at when you look into like staffing costs and the replatforming costs over a year. And then we launched at the start of COVID. Yeah. And then we're like, oh God, and our sales just like fell off a cliff.
when you're doing business, you're almost guessing, right? Like, yeah. How much of this can I sell? How well is it going to sell? Like, if I need 12,000 units of this one product, and now this product comes in four colors, now I've got 12,000 times four, like, you're like, oh, do I do it? And then you're either...
I mean, we have a professional, like, merchandise planning team, but you still don't get it right. Like, it's Trends change. You can't predict customer behavior. It's so tough.
Hey, Polly fam, I've got something special for you. For a limited time only, I have a discount code for my business course. In case you didn't know, the course is a blueprint for starting an online business and growing it to 7 or 8 figures. It's 10 modules of videos that you can watch at your own pace, covering everything from sourcing product, growing and developing your product range, operations, and marketing and scaling your business. Just use the code PODCAST at checkout at thelazyceo.com.
In terms of this agency that, like, well, kind of fucked you, what are the red flags that you would look for next time going to something like this? And what advice would you give to someone else to kind of avoid that kind of situation?
Yeah, I think, like, it is one of my, like, main things when I do talk to people and they ask about this is, if you can, like, first you have to learn your business. You don't want to go too big too soon anyway, because then you don't learn anything and you don't know anything. I hear
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot of people say, like, oh, I got screwed over by a marketing agency, by someone doing my Facebook ads. Like, they'd never show me reports. I didn't know if I was making money. You have to know every area of your business so you can oversee it, or you have to have someone that knows it. So going now into, like, agencies, we're all over them. We micromanage everything, right? We have trust issues now, but there's a lot of agencies out there that burn a lot of people, and that they're selling the dream and then they're closed overnight. Like, ours isn't even around anymore.
All right. Well, good.
We had 30K just dropped into the bin, literally. The red flags are over-promising and under-delivering. Like, if someone's going to sit there and sell you the world, you have to understand that doesn't mean that they're great at sales. They're going to sell my brand like a dream. It means that they're in marketing. They know how to sell. They know how to sell themselves and their brand to you, and you're going to believe it. So you need to, like, ask, first of all, contracts, always contracts.
Yes.
Secondly, you can't just trust them and then walk away. You've got to, like, you have to micromanage a bit, plus you're learning.
Yes.
You have to be there with your
don't
business.
Don't think outsourcing means you're doing like a lot less work.
Hell no. You're doing a lot more.
And you don't have control over them like your own team. Yes.
Yeah, no. And your business isn't to them what it is to you.
Exactly.
Because they're working with six different businesses. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's not. It's just they don't really care. And a lot of them know how to just make it look good. Like, we'll sit down with, you know, some marketing agencies and they're like, we're doing really well. Like, it's doing good. And because my brother knows all the background in that well now, he's like, oh, okay, like, but what about this? Show me this. Can you pull up this? And really, like, ask them and interrogate them almost. Get these reports. Really look at it. Don't trust it. Know your figures. If you don't, get an accountant. Like, get them to know your figures. Teach you it. Yeah, I'd say anyone that's overselling, don't do it.
Oh my God, overselling. Yeah. I feel like some businesses, I'm like, do you have a bigger sales team than the people doing the work? How is your office so nice? If you have too many free snacks in your office, I'm on to you.
That's so funny.
But I also think we're all going to get screwed over by someone. Mm. So I guess you want to, like, invest less.
Yeah.
So then when you are screwed over and you have those learnings, it's not that much.
Yeah, you've got to have, like, a safety bank account, really.
But that's amazing that you were able to, like, bounce back. That sounds like...
Yeah, I think we clued on right at the right time as well, just before we were about to be like, buried into the ground. We clued on.
Yeah.
And we just went, you know what? We're just going to do it ourselves. But yeah, I'd say start small and do it yourself as much as you can. And when you bring someone on, don't let them have free range. Be there and let them know, hey, I know. Don't ever let them know that you don't know.
Absolutely. For Melly's Beauty Parlor, when did you open that? And how did you make the decision to add something else on to your already like booming, busy business?
Funnily enough, at the time that everything happened with the rebrand with Feather Sisters and then our income, like we were taking a salary from that in the beginning, my brother said to do this and to put all the money back into the business, you're going to need a job. And I was like, a job? Like, I know I don't work for anyone. No, I'm not doing it. And he was like, well, then you're going to have to like work for yourself. Like you do beauty, you do like lashes, you do things. Can you not do that on the side? And then I was like, oh, okay, I'll do anything for Feather Sisters. So I'm going to do what I know best and what I love to do and would do for free, which is beauty. And I've got a little spare room, a little multimedia room in my apartment. I'm just going to get a bed, set it up and start doing some lashes. I didn't want to spend money, obviously, because the whole point was to save money. Yeah. So I went onto Gumtree, I went onto Facebook Marketplace and I started just like advertising cheap little sets to try and get people in. Wasn't the best at lashes at the time. I was like faking it till I make it. Yeah. Again, funnily enough, I knew customers, I knew customer behavior, I knew how to build the rapport and I knew sales from the cruise ship so I could sell my business to people. And then word got around and I started being booked like 3 weeks in advance from my home right before maths actually. I was like, I want to bet on myself and go into a salon. I know I'm not there right now. Everything's happening with Feathers is kind of on hold during this big rebrand. So I have the time. I'll rent a room from someone. So I rented this little room that was in a gym. There was a gym above me, gym below me. And I rented this little space, tiny. It's like 3x3. It was like gym weights dropping above us. Oh. It was like not the best. So I moved in there and I didn't want to commit to a big salon because, well, I didn't have the clientele for that right now. And I also was in the application process for maths. And I was like, when I put my mind to something, like I get it and I'm going to do this. So I hadn't heard from them and I was like, I'm going to get this still. So I, did that with zero commitment. It was just a month-to-month lease. And then I went away and did the show. Then I had to come back and start again, rebuild again. I had lost all my clients because I had someone come take over that I didn't know. They gave me 3 weeks notice. So I had someone that I didn't know, I couldn't trust yet, take over my clients. And I was meant to just come back to my clients. And I came back to no clients because they had sent a message out to my database to say, hey, I haven't heard from Mel, don't know where she is, but this is the address. I'll keep looking after you guys.
Oh my God. So they stole your entire database?
Yeah, there was a message sent to all my database and I had one client message me and say, did you know this? Did you organize this? And it was her address for them to all go to.
Did you find this out while you're on the show and you couldn't do anything about it?
I found it out during the couple swap week on the show, which was the most stressful week.
And you were with Harrison's? Not that I'm not a
super. Yeah. So me and Lake were in our most biggest stress fight of the entire experiment. It was almost finished. It was a mental toll. I had business going on the side and then this salon stuff happening and I couldn't get there. We weren't allowed our phones because we were filming. So I couldn't do too much. I just had to kind of trust the process and just think, you know what? My clients are loyal as soon as they know where I am.
Yeah.
I was in NDAs and that I couldn't tell them.
Yeah.
So I got back and the salon was not in the best state at the time, or my little studio, whatever you'd call it. And then I just started from scratch again.
Did people come back when you?
Almost everyone came back.
That's amazing. Yeah. And that's what did they say? Like, have you seen this person?
No.
No wonder you have trust issues. Like but the agency.
It's like two steps forward, 10 steps back. Absolutely loved that. And like even with maths and everything airing, I was like, I don't want to get wrapped up too much in that. I have these things I worked really, really hard on. These are my like purpose in life. And this is what I want to like put my energy in. Started to build that and brought Caitlin on, who I met from the show. And she helped me really like build
She's a makeup artist, right?
Yeah. Well, she did lashes as well. Oh, and then I just trained her the Melly's way, you know? Turned it into Melly's Beauty Parlor. We opened up a little salon. It's kind of a big salon, to be honest.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah. And we just went with like, I've got a spa background, so I wanted to bring the spa element into the salon world. So we went with more like luxury treatments and aesthetics. I was just thinking the other day, like this time last year was just me and Caitlin. Just a few weeks ago, it was just me on my own. And we're now looking to employ our 10th
Right, because there's that also gap before the show starts.
Yeah.
And then you do kind of start building a following.
Yeah.
And having that mass reach that you're actually just like working on. That must be exciting. You're like, okay, we're working on the business. This is going to be great.
You don't know how it's going to go because you don't know your edit,
your
right?
Your edit. Okay, so what did the show bring for both businesses?
When I first came off the show, there was a lot of people, right? There was a lot of eyes on you. There was a lot of people. Mm. Socials were going crazy. Mm. I didn't want to be that person that like shoved my business in everyone's face. And I also have this ego where I didn't want the show to be the success of my business. Yeah, I wanted to create it myself. And I'm like, I could do it without the show. I don't need the show. I think for Feather Sisters, I had done one tiny little post, didn't even say too much. And it was 10 seconds showing our pen. And it was like a sellout, right? So it was, wow. It was a lot. For Melly's, it was different because obviously not everyone's in Brisbane. Yeah. And it was also a bit weird because I was still heavily on the tools. If you're coming to Melly's, you're meeting me.
Yeah.
Now you want to know about the show, talk about the show. Do you like us? Do you not? Like, so it was very, I couldn't separate business from maths. So I was a bit hesitant to reveal like the businesses. It's had a lot of support. We get a lot of fans in there. I've done a lot of photos with people.
Yeah. I feel like before Shark Tank, people like, afterwards, so many people come to our warehouse sales and take photos.
Yeah.
As opposed to,
and I love meeting them. They're so nice, right?
Yeah.
And like some people don't even get lashes. They were just there to support. Oh, and I love that. Yes. And then I'd have a lot with Feather Sisters as well. They were like, you know, I'm probably never going to use this, but I just want to support you.
Mm.
To just love. Now it's definitely like the show's kind of calmed down a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's back to just the grit and the grind of, you know, more clients in the door, more departments, more technicians. Now we're growing a real business. Yeah. So
the fact that it has helped you build the following though, it's like such a great marketing tool. It's like being able to like have a platform to kind of like promote what you want. And you don't want to like hard sell too much your products.
Yeah.
But it's good to be able to have to actually do have that platform.
Absolutely. And people want to see the behind the scenes.
Exactly. They, you know, they love it.
Definitely much more like sales, much more bookings and things like that from the show for sure. But again, now kind of dying down a bit more. And it again, just makes me go step back into gear of, okay, now I'm back to what it was before. I got to keep going.
Were you worried about your business?
I was really worried about my business.
Yeah.
So even in the application process, I had moments where I was like, do I? Like, because when you have business, I know it's like, I don't have children, so it's probably unfair to say, but like, I really do think that businesses are like your baby. Like you'll do anything for your business, right? You're protective as hell because you work so bloody hard on it. When I got on the show, I was just thinking like my brother, he's not into all that stuff. He doesn't really have social media or anything. So he was just like, what are you doing? It wasn't just me that it would affect. It would affect him. It would affect everything. Yeah. And then that edit, the wedding overnight, I was
hated.
I was like, I don't care about you hating me. I care about my business. Don't come for me and my business.
Right.
Like, holy shit, what have I done? But I'm also thankful in the same time because I had the businesses as a distraction. I had something else. I had a purpose. I didn't let everyone kind of get in my mind. But 24 hours later, then it was like, loved again. So it was like went from villain to hero overnight.
You're like, that's good. Because maybe at the start, if you got a slightly bad at it, it means like that's your story arc. Like, so you know, it's like, okay, can only go up from here.
Exactly. I was like, hit the ground. And I was like, you know what? I'm resilient. I do business. It's a risk you need to take. But at the same time, you just need to stay aligned with your alignment and your vision. And you just need to trust the process. And like, I always knew deep down, like I'm a good person.
Yeah.
I give a lot to people. If they're going to find a bad edit for me, like, hats off to them. It means you're bloody good at editing because I am a good person. So when that first edit happened, I was like, I have faith still. I have faith that you're going to see the real me and you're going to know that that is not me. Mm-hmm. And so thankfully that happened. But yeah.
How was leaving Feather Sisters while you were doing the show?
It was really hard. And at the time we had a third business going.
Oh, really?
We had a fashion label. And again, that wasn't easy. It was acquiring a business, which we had never done before. So there was a lot of legals involved for that, which we hadn't been in legal proceedings before to like acquire the business. So it was all new again. So there was the show. There was obviously Feather Sisters, the salon happening, and then the fashion label. It was hard. I think you even see me in some of my, they call them boxies, but they're chapter cameras, when they would ask me like, how does it to get here, to leave your life behind right now? And I was crying over my businesses because it's like, oh my gosh, I've never left my business before. Because it was like my purpose. So I was like, it was like leaving a child. It's the weirdest thing. I don't know. I just like with everything that happened to me in life, it was like, that was my savior. And I was like, who am I without that? And I don't know what's happening. Like, I've been micromanaging and in control of this for so long to make sure that we don't get screwed over again or we don't go belly up or anything like that. And now you're not even giving me my phone, my laptop. Now I've got like a husband that I'm like obviously fighting with on the show. He's also got a business, so which helped a bit because we were in the same situation.
Yeah,
all of that happening. So very, very hard. I was still in Zooms. I was still in Skypes. Anytime I got my phone back for a second, I was like in Zooms, in Skypes. What's happening? Tell me everything.
I imagine you're like checking your phone, like mums check their baby monitors.
Yeah.
And you're checking your like dashboards.
Me. Yeah. No, it was me. It was me. At the same time, because I wasn't there, I noticed like in a lot of our meetings and stuff, even with marketing and that, like my brother was always like, I need to get approval from Mel. I need to get approval from Mel. And I couldn't give the approval and my mind wasn't there. And I would say during that process of the application, the filming and then coming back, we lost a year in the business. So yes, we gained a lot coming off the show, but it didn't make up for the year that was lost because our directors were not there present with the business.
Being entrepreneurial, you know, starting a business, it's like not always thinking about like the what ifs, you know, like yeah, back to my board, like, oh, what if I get a bad, what if I blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
I think you got to be that little naive, a little bit delulu to be like, I'm just going to do this. I'm going to do, you know.
Like, what's the worst that could happen? And worst things, like bad things have happened to me and I've been resilient. The thing is, if you're really like a business person at heart and you really have that fire in you to do business, nothing is going to stop you and you will find a way. If you can't get in the front door, you're going to go to the side door, jump over the back door, break down the roof, get in, like you're going to get in, you're going to do it. So I was like, you know what? Everything happens for a reason. If I got a really bad edit, I'm going to somehow turn that into a good edit after the show. Like it's, I'm going to somehow use that to elevate.
I love it. Going to be a little bit delulu.
You do. You really do have to be delulu. Like my brother's always like, Mel, just rein it in. I'm like, rein it up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Rein it up. I love it.
Big maths question. Like how did you make that decision to go?
Well, at the same time, like I had been doing business for like 4 years by that time and I hadn't dated or had a relationship in 4 years. So I was also like, okay, it's great to do business and it's great to give back to, you know, people that you're employing or the business itself, customers and do all this. But like, what about me? If I keep going the way I'm going and being so obsessed with business and growing it. And so like every single second I missed birthdays, I missed everything. And it's not because I didn't have the time. It's because I was so like in love with the project of business that I just knew every second counted. My spare time, that's what I wanted to do. So how is I going to have a partner, meet a partner, even have a partner understand why I didn't get back to them in an hour? Like I would go and like dating apps and I wouldn't get back to someone in like an hour and they would be freaking out. I'm like, oh no, you're not going to hear from me for a day.
Yeah.
Not an hour. Yeah. Like I'm busy. And also I didn't want to put anyone in front of my businesses. I was like, you come second. And so I was just like, I have an issue. I actually do have, if I stay the way I am going to miss the boat. I am going to be single. I do want the family. I do want the love, this and that to enjoy all the successes of business with.
Absolutely.
So my like going on the show and applying for the show was literally, I need this for so many reasons, but like 99% of this reason is because I need to find someone in a similar predicament to me and start my life. I mean, it went well for a while. I came off the show as a success couple. I had my man for, I think it was 16 months. And then we're not together anymore. I'm back to the beginning again. Yeah. I feel like my life is just always back to the beginning, right? But then I know more for next time.
No, you're still 2 steps forward, 1 step back. You're still forward.
Yeah, I'm still half an inch forward.
Yes, yes. What is next? What is the vision?
World domination.
No. Yes.
Yes. I go big or go home. Hey, that's like right. If you're going to do it, just do it. I'm calling 2024 my year of true potential. Mm-hmm. And I mean that because I always give my all in everything, but I still feel I've never really given 100% to business, my life and just where everything could be. So I've been hesitant, especially doing the show, like not asking someone for help on something or just taking like that route that's a little safer. And so now I'm like, you know what? If you don't ask, you don't get. This is my year of just pushing the limits and really just having like nothing left in the tank so that I can look back and be like, how big can I take this? How big can I really take it? Like do the impossible, whatever is in my mind, in someone's mind where people will say, oh, you know, that's not meant for you. Or that only happens to people with this and this and this. Like I'm just here to prove everyone wrong this year, push it to the limits, look back and be like from the hill, look down and just be like, holy shit. Yes. We started there and we're here. And so that's my year.
How do you juggle everything? And you still need to make time to try and date.
My love life is non-existent. Yeah, there's a lot going on because you also obviously also have Melinda Rochelle, which is like I was influencing before the show. Mm. And now coming off the show, you're obviously doing that quite full time, you know. So I've got a management in UK for that. And then we're now bringing on like a full-time marketing manager to just like take a lot of the efforts off of the directors in Feathers. This is we're still really hands-on. Like we're still a very small operation because we haven't let those ropes go just yet. So we're putting a lot of trust this year into building our own internal team, finally, right? And then the salon, we've got a manager now. Sorry, this is all scary to do, right? I'm not on the tools too much and I'm only in there a couple of days a week and I have to trust the processes. Someone else is running my salon and my brother always says like, it's her salon now. You have to like, let it go of it. So that's hard. But the balance is coming from, I think we're finally at the stage where we are going to hire out, be the dumbest in the room. Get someone that is qualified in the things that we're not qualified in, someone that's more knowledgeable, more experienced. Like we are both, myself and my brother, know-it-alls, right? And we think we can do it the best. Mm. We come from that like competitive family where we are hogs and like I'll fight him that I can do it better. And we're going to trust now. We're going to slowly hire out. We're not going to jump.
Yes, slowly.
Slowly hire out and then the balance is like, I'm here doing all this math stuff now, even to just shut my mind off that and all the podcasts to come in and do this podcast. It's like a switch again. I've got to slow down a little. I've got to like find some me time and I've got to balance everything and kind of make it even. It's not like this is more important. This is like less important. Mm-hmm. Everything's an even playing field. Everything gets a bit and we're doing it at the same time. You get a manager, you get a manager, you get a manager.
Yeah.
Right? You get a marketing campaign, you get a marketing campaign, now you get a marketing campaign. Mm. But then at the same time, the salon, because it is that brick and mortar, it has to almost come a little first because there are keys to open the store and close the store. And if someone is sick, if someone leaves.
Which I think is like the hard part because the scaling potential with e-com is so big.
Yes.
You're like,
the world's your oyster.
Yeah.
It's really like how much effort you put in to that. Whereas the brick and mortar, it depends on clients, depends on staff. It depends on someone physically standing there doing a service on someone. You can't just like call someone and be like, hey, can you fill in today? Like you've got a team
but
now.
Then also working on your personal brand always benefits the businesses as well. Yeah. So it's like,
well, this is what I'm trying to like tell my brother. I'm like, if I come first, I'm the umbrella and I just trickle it all down. Yeah. But he's like, Mel, keep it separate. You'll pay for that yourself. I'm like, how do I weasel this in?
I know, but I had to say to my husband, like, I'm sure the podcast is going to benefit the business. Absolutely. I'm not writing a business case. He wants a business case for everything. I'm like, I'm just going to do it. I'm sure it's going to benefit.
Yeah, that's it. That's the same. It's like the more exposure you have, the more you have your voice, the more you get your story out, the more people resonate, the more people want to support and the more people just come.
Oh my God. I love talking to you. Could talk all day. Could you leave us with your advice for other entrepreneurs that are listening?
My advice to other entrepreneurs that are listening are shut out the noise. There's going to be a lot of noise and it's going to come from the people closest to you because they think that they are doing you justice by caring and telling you what's right. If you know in your heart of hearts that you want to do business or that you want to work on a project that you're just so passionate about that you like think about it all day long, like do it. Start it now. Don't start it tomorrow. Start it right now. Do what you can and make sure that you're not looking and comparing yourself with others like they're now to where you're starting. Because everyone obviously starts where you're starting. So just remember that. Don't compare your day one to, their year five. It's going to be hard. So when you get knocked down the first time and you have that self-doubt, keep going, keep going, keep going, always keep going. The trick is just to keep going.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest thing that separates people from success or not. It's not easy to start a business, but anyone can start a business.
Yeah.
It's being resilient and then bouncing back when you hit an obstacle.
It's the mindset.
It is.
And if you let those other noises and voices in, that comparing and judgment, if you let that in and you crumble, business is probably not for you.
Are we saying it comes back to just being a bit delulu?
Just be bloody delulu and just have a vision and don't stop until you get it. Yes. Right? Stay aligned and focused to that vision. Just like smash anyone out of the way that tries to get involved and just like keep going until you grab it. Yeah, grab that.
Love that. Thank you. Okay, that's it from me for now. Thanks for listening. And if you're loving the podcast, don't forget to leave us a review. And if you want more, join the conversation on the podcast Instagram at thelazyceo_podcast. Link to the show notes. Catch you next Tuesday.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.